Following program has adult language and potential spoilers. Listener, beware.
All right, you motherfuckers. You had your shot. Now I'm taking mine.
The Marvel superheroes have arrived. The Avengers in America.
Fantastic Four.
Spider-Man.
Iron Man.
Later in the 70s, I really wasn't reading comic books. I read comic books up to about 1975 or something like that, you know. And after that, when you and the boys would have comic books, I might read one here and there. So, you know.
We were looking at a DC House ad where they're showing all their big properties. So Superman, Batman, Flash, Green Lantern, Jerry Lewis, Bob Hope, I think the Fox and the Crow, Sugar and Spike, and Aquaman. Mm-hmm. And you were like, oh yeah, Aquaman. Tell me about that.
Well, I mean, Aquaman, when I read comic books, I really liked Doctor Strange, Aquaman, Archie. I loved Archie. Most of them, I mean, I would read them. You know, I'd read a Batman or a Superman, especially in the service, because you read whatever's available and everybody's got their selection, so you read theirs too. Fantastic Four was a big one with me. Oh, and Ghost Rider.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, I still have a set of those Ghost Riders that I gave y'all.
The Rise of the Midnight Suns.
Yeah, it was there's like three of them. It's the complete set of whatever.
I think it was more than that. I think it was like eight. Well, totally, because they were in the poly bags and they had the posters you could put together. And
I still have that in storage. I've got a lot of baseball cards from those eras. Mm-hmm. You know, the ones from when I was a kid, long gone. But when y'all were kids, no, I've got those.
Well, how long did you read Ghost Rider?
I probably saw Ghost Rider when I was a kid on the stand when comics were still like 15 cents or something.
Mm-hmm.
And read it all through Vietnam and stuff. I mean, that was, Ghost Rider was one of my favorite ones, and mm-hmm. probably second to that was Fantastic Four. But I did read a lot of Doctor Strange. It was just that Doctor Strange was kind of hard to get a hold of, you know?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they weren't, Doctor Strange wasn't always on the racks. And I read, you know, a lot of the mini novels and comic books, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. There
was one called Ghost Stories I used to read.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
I think that might have been a Charlton.
Well, I don't know who made it. You know, and yeah. Back in those days, I'm going to tell you, I didn't care. I mean, it wasn't until y'all were kids making a big deal out of it. Of course, I always, like a lot of people, the way Stan would write his, he'd always include himself, like, mm-hmm. one way or another in a comic. Somehow or another, he always seemed to be like mentioned when it was something he was doing. And, you know, over time, I mean, I guess you just start thinking that these people are familiar to you, you know. In other words, mm-hmm. That's a great guy. He's a bud, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And Stan always, like, he often would narrate at the beginning of the books.
Right.
Very ingratiating.
Right. Or there'll be some comment and he would sign it, Stan.
What do you remember about Ghost Rider, though?
The thing about Ghost Rider was, in the comic books, I never got the feeling he was a bad guy. I know now, in retrospect, that he was kind of a bad guy. But I always just saw him as an avenging angel. He was the worst. You know, all of the heroes, you know, at one time or another, they're like referred to the bad guy's worst nightmare. But he actually was. And in a way, so was Doctor Strange. I think that was the thing that drew me to those characters, was that they were the worst nightmare.
What time period did you read Doctor Strange?
I don't remember when I first saw it. I started actually reading comic books about 1963. Like I said, I read them to about the mid-70s pretty regularly. I know up to that time, I was pretty heavy into reading comic books. But then again, I didn't say that many of them either.
Well, yeah. It was like a magazine. You'd read it once and then pass it around or whatever.
No, I may keep it for a while, but for the most part, like during the war, we were pretty conscious of people needing stuff and wanting to share our stuff. People shared their cigarettes and maybe some shaving cream, you know, maybe coughed up a razor blade every once in a while. About about the only thing in service you didn't share during those times was if you had a Coca-Cola, that was gold.
Because you know my uncle was really into Doctor Strange, too. Did you guys have any kind of bonding over that?
No. Your uncle, I didn't have that much contact with him. When we were younger, of course, I was seeing your mother's best friend, not your mother. Your uncle was always usually at work because, you know, he worked from about the time he was 16 on. Then when we were older, there was only about a two-week period I had any real contact with him. You know, he was always a matter of discussion. I mean, he was your grandmother's pride and joy. But being around, no. Actually, his later wife, his girlfriend, later wife, I knew her much better. And of course, you knew later on, we were working at the same, finally figured it out after I was there about 6-7 years. It's like, because I heard her on the phone talking about your uncle.
Yeah.
And I just happened to ask, are you talking about this? Yeah. And she really didn't remember me.
I was just curious because you both, he was really into Doctor Strange to the point where, you know, he wanted to be an artist and he drew, I don't know if it was a high school comic strip or a college comic strip or what it was, or maybe something in the service. And he also would do recreations of some of Frank Bruner's covers. One in particular that's really famous is where there's a crystal ball with a skull in the middle of it. And then there's these tentacles and they're coming at Doctor Strange and Strange is shooting magic bolts at it. And he'd done a recreation of that. And my grandmother had this book of different art that he had done over the years. And he'd worked professionally doing that for a while, doing like signs and such. So him being such a big Doctor Strange fan and you being a Doctor Strange fan, yet you guys had nothing to do with each other in that respect.
We didn't talk about this.
Yeah.
Yeah. The conversation was more of an adult, immediate type, you know, that's something that, you know, buddies get into talking about. And it's just like you're talking about your art. You and your sister, y'all are into art. Yours went more in the comic book and hers more into fantasy period, but it's very similar. But you know, you take a lot more, you go into a lot more detail and doing your own comic stuff. I didn't do that. I mean, I was artistic. I did things in art, but my stuff was, first off, most of it wasn't drawing or painting, you know, other than things like ceramics. You're talking about a completely different, but I was always proud of y'all. I always saw talent in y'all. I never thought you were going to make a living at it, but unlike a lot of people, you just never know. So I always encourage that thing, just like your sister's strides in building these fancy cakes. Mm-hmm. You know, she can make a living at that if she had to, and so I support her in every way.
You told me you were into the Fantastic Four, too.
Most of that stuff, I was really serious about reading. I mean, I wasn't really serious about... Y'all were much more serious about the comic books. To me, it was a treasured form of entertainment, I guess you would call it. You know, my number one, I mean, you talk about comic books, and I guess it would be a comic book. My number one was Vampirella.
Yeah, you told me about that. You bought the first issue, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I probably had the first 40 issues.
Damn, you were on that for a long time.
Yeah. And those are the ones I would say. I wouldn't put those out for other people. But when I went in the service, you know, almost every, and this happens to a lot of guys. Mm-hmm. You know, you go away for a few years and your stuff disappears. And that happened with a lot of stuff. It just disappeared. And later on I had to replace it. But of course, technology, and of course, you're not going to replace Vampirella. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there was a time in the...
Actually, I can get you a lot of those Vampirellas. You may have seen me bring them around every now and again. They have these little telephone books, essentially, where they're like 400, 500 pages of reprints. And since Vampirella was black and white in the first place, color wouldn't make a difference to you. And they did one volume like that that covers a good chunk of the run that you would have had. They don't do the... Like, I know in the magazine, they would have horror stories in the back. You'd have a Vampirella story, and then you'd have a bunch of different horror stories, like a Tales from the Crypt kind of thing.
Yeah, no, and Tales from a Crypt. That was another comic book I would read. In fact, sometimes I'd pick up Tales from the Crypt in the 80s.
I think Jim Stone started doing reprints of that at some point.
Well, I don't know. I see it on a stand in a convenience store, and I pick it up, and I buy it. You know, but you know, like I said, you know, when I started buying comic books, I think some of them were still a nickel, but most of them were a dime, and then they went up to like 15 cents, and then they went up to 20 and 25. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like candy bar.
Oh, yeah. Well, when I would buy my comics, the one thing I would tend to buy candy-wise was sixlets, because I think you could get them for a nickel. So whatever pocket change I'd have left over from the comic, I'd pick up the sixlets just because they were the cheap ones. And there's nothing that you can buy for a nickel anymore. Well, matter of fact, it might have even been a penny at one point. I think they might have had some penny candy.
No, no, no. Sixlets was for us, for me, that was your penny candy. But the sixlets that were a penny were smaller than the ones that were in the nickel.
Those are the ones I actually liked. I like they were like BB pellets, and they, I don't think they make those anymore. Those are the kind I like because I liked I could get a few of them on my tongue and be rolling them around my tongue. I like the sense of that. Where when you find them today, they're I don't know what size you would call that. They're what about a centimeter thick or something like that?
I don't know. They still taste like Halloween candy. It seems to me they're the same. And every once in a while, you know, I'm not supposed to eat that stuff, but every once in a while I'll see somebody with sixlets, and I'll definitely grab them.
Well, and they're not actual chocolate either.
No, they're carob.
So
no,
it's a distinctive flavor, distinct difference.
Yeah, there's a bunch of those candies if you read that they're carob. You know, it's like Tootsie Rolls. There's nothing chocolate or carob about them.
What is Tootsie Roll, man? I don't know.
It's a goo. Your brother-in-law has that cable, and he's always watching one of them shows that where they show you how things are made. It's just a goo they make from all kinds of stuff. And they heat it up and press it and cool it off, and you got your Tootsie Roll.
Chocolate flavored sludge, then, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, but see, the whole point is there's no carob or chocolate in it. You can read the wrapper. I think some of it's kind of a, I don't even think it's caramel. It's something else. I remember watching it, and I was sitting there going, there's absolutely no chocolate in the Tootsie Roll. But then again, you know, you got to think, it's a very distinctive flavor.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like a taffy, too.
Yeah, except it melts different than taffies do. It's like harder, it's hard at first, but then it gets really soft really fast, kind of like some of that Laffy Taffy.
What kept you on Vampirella for so long?
Well, I'm not real sure, but it might have had something to do that I thought she was real hot. It's a different era. Now, it was even different for you, but, you know, Vampirella was pretty risque. There was a lot of adults that were drawn to Vampirella, and it was, I can't remember, but it seems like Vampirella was somewhere around the beginning of the 70s, you know?
Yeah, I think it started around 68.
Yeah, okay, well, that might be. I was thinking it might have been closer to the 70s, but like I said, I don't keep track of those details. I just remember buying them, and it was, I got the one, I got the two, I got the three, and I'm really getting into this. And really, essentially, nobody I knew got into it, including the friends that would come hang out in my bedroom and smoke cigarettes and stuff, you know, because that was one of the things, you know, I grew up quick. And I had a bedroom that was painted black with black light posters and black lights and stuff. I didn't do drugs or anything, but I smoked cigarettes, and every once in a while I'd talk somebody into buying me some beer, and so my friends would come over, kind of like that 70s show down in the basement. And I would have those Vampirellas around. I mean, I didn't store them in the closet or anything. They were like stacked up in a corner. I had this old floor fan from the 40s that, you know, that was black, and then I put fluorescent watercolors on it so it'd glow in the dark, and it was pulled away from the corner, and my Vampirellas were all stacked up right there. Back in those days, you know, we didn't care anything about a bed. I had a nice mattress on the floor. Everything was bean bags then.
I remember growing up, we had a big blue leaky bean bag that I used to sit on. A little bit of leftover of that.
Yeah, it may have been the same bean bag your mama had when she was little. Is that the one?
Wouldn't shock me. Like I said, it was an old, old blue
one. I think it was originally your uncle's. And when he moved out of the house, your mother got that room. Yeah, sometimes the reason why I would end up at your grandmother's house was because would be spending the night with your mother. Her mother, her family was a different situation. I couldn't go over there and hang out, but I could go. At one time, they lived in a TV shop. You know, it was it was like a duplex. Half of it was a TV shop. Half of it was an apartment. And that was their apartment before they moved over to where you were born. But yeah, that's how come I was over there and why I knew so much about your uncle. I remember when he first started dating his wife and stuff. One of those situations, I was probably 15, something like that. And anytime a new chick walks in a room, you're going to check her out. It doesn't matter whether you're interested or not. That's going to be something you think about. Because, you know, I probably spent 20 years, all I thought about were women. Girls, women, you know, depending on my age. And there you go, Vampiro.
Right. You mentioned Aquaman, too. Where did that come from?
It was in the 60s, I know. I don't know how old I was. I could have been 9, 10. I don't even know when Aquaman started.
Oh, he's been around since the war.
Okay, well, it probably was one of the first ones. See, my first interest in comic books was we traveled the country. My father would move us. We started off in Texas, pretty much lived in every major city in Texas except for Dallas. Then we moved to Tennessee. And so we would spend our summers in Texas with my mother's family. That required a lot of traveling. Back in those, originally, you know, that was like 750 miles from Nashville to Houston, because that was before those interstates. Most of it was old highways and stuff. In fact, you know, a lot of stuff we drove on was the old Route 66. So, yeah.
Get your kicks?
Yeah, well, I watched the show. Mm-hmm. So whenever we were on that highway, I would be thinking about the show and the car and kind of wishing I had a convertible, you know. Mm-hmm. I still do that. My second and third car were both convertible. Man, I've been wanting one ever since. You remember when you were young, I practically lived on a motorcycle. But I haven't had a motorcycle. And I'm unfit to drive a motorcycle nowadays. Probably picked up Aquaman at a Howard Johnson's on 59 in Arkansas or something like that while we were traveling. And I just dug it. Cat could swim fast, you know. He did some cool stuff.
Did you like the sea shows when you were growing up?
The what?
Did you like the sea shows when you were growing up? Like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea or Sea Hunt or anything like that?
Sea Hunt, definitely watched Sea Hunt from the very, and of course Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. Mm-hmm. You know, it was one of those shows that was not kind of in my mother's or father's wheelhouse, but it was enough. I don't know, it was, we watched Mission Impossible and Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, but those weren't the kind of shows that were normal for my parents to watch, so... Mm-hmm. But we did watch those, yeah. I read novels from a very early age. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure this is correct. I probably read everything of Verne's. Mm-hmm. You said like 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and mm-hmm. stuff. I was probably 11. And it was probably, his stuff was probably, the first thing I read was Call of the Wild. The second thing was the Iliad and the Odyssey. Then I started reading the classic, and of course Verne was probably the next thing I read, everything I could get my hands on. You know, I remember reading the works of Poe when I was still 11 years old.
I just remember you, especially when I was growing up, you used to have a pretty strong interest in marine life and stuff. You'd take us out to the aquarium, well, you'd take us to see movies about it.
And part of that is living on the Gulf Coast of Texas and having all those relatives in Louisiana that, even when they didn't make their living at it, their hobby was shrimping. You're talking about people that went out in the bay in a rowboat and did shrimping. So, yeah, that was kind of a big deal. One of the first things, my father didn't have that much contact with me. Mm-hmm. I mean, not like you were absent a lot, and yet we had a lot more contact. My father, he lived an adult life and was interested in adult things. Mm-hmm. He was real good about buying me cool stuff for Christmas and cool stuff for my birthday, because I got my first gun when I was 10. At a time when I was asking for a BB gun, I get a 22. But he would take me hunting with him every year, and usually he was hunting with friends, and we're talking rabbits and squirrels, and I got to go when they were quail and dove hunting, but I didn't have a shotgun, so I didn't get to shoot. I did get to clean all the birds. And after hunting, they would all eat steaks. I would be eating what they killed, and I cleaned. But one of the first things he did, we lived in Corpus when I was 7, 8, 9. He took me crabbing. I was in charge of the crab nets, because he would go down drinking beer and fishing with grown-ups, and I would be left to tend to the crab nets. And I just thought that was too cool. But he taught me all that stuff. Of course, in his mind, there's only a certain time of year that you do that kind of thing. But it was something we do 3-4 times a year. So I would see a lot of marine life. And when we lived in San Antonio, even before that, him and a friend of his built a cabin cruiser together. I think we took that to Corpus Christi and launched it. I went out fishing on it. It's the only time I ever got seasick, and I still to this day, I don't know if it was seasick or I was this little kid. I was was like probably 6 or 7. And they take me out on this boat, and the only thing they've got is a thermos full of unsweetened coffee. You know, both your grandfather and a lot of his friends, regardless of what it looks like they did in later life, they were salesmen. Salesmen don't generally have a lot of good You know, you would think even in that day and age, they'd be smart enough to take some water with them or something. Mm. No. Didn't even take they had an ice chest, but the ice chest was supposedly for what they would catch.
Right.
Those guys believed that you kept it alive on a line. So they used like these stringers, and they would hopscotch to places to fish, and whatever they caught would be on the stringer and then on the deck. And it wasn't until you start going in that they'd ice it down in the ice chest. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, back then they were made out of aluminum and they weren't all that big or all that sturdy. And it surprises me they didn't even take beer, just the ice chest, which didn't have any ice in it because they would buy the ice after they got back. Anyway, my whole life, Houston and the bayous, I remember when all the bayous were wild. And to see an alligator or a deer in your neighborhood was no big deal. It was a regular thing. Even some of the piney woods around Houston were semi-swampy. And every once in a while, you come across an alligator or a caiman. Because, you know, people used to buy a caiman in the pet store. And then So, a little crocodile was not that unusual around Houston.
Do you have any other comic book memories?
It was just something, you know, when you're on the road traveling, you're bored out of your gourd. One of the things, and this kind of stuck with me even when I was in the service, I got addicted to dum-dums. It was like comic books and dum-dums went together. And I'm guessing it was because they're so cheap. You know, my mother, when we were on those road trips, would buy these big bags of dum-dums. Man, I would eat dum-dums. I bet you my sugar was off the scale. Yeah, which is, you know, because I never slept in cars or on airplanes and stuff. I mean, a lot of people do that, but I'm not good at it. Never have been, still not. Your great-grandmother liked buses. And I didn't mind traveling on buses, except when it was going through every town. It was like every few miles you would stop in a different town. So riding a bus 200 miles was a 8-hour torment. But people slept on those, and I couldn't sleep on those. I just sit by the window and hope something caught my attention. But I'm not, you know, when you ask for memories about them, I mean, I remember that they took me to a world that, as long as I had one, I didn't worry about the hours passing while we were driving. And when I was in the war, there are these periods, you know, it's kind of, sometimes it's just hard to unwind. Comic books would take you outside reality, which can be a very useful thing at times. And the problem with comic books, when you read as fast as I do, you better take your time and look at the artwork or something. And with me, shoot, I could go through a comic, I could reread a comic book 4 or 5 times, you know, in the span of 15 minutes or something. They don't last that long. So, ads. Mm-hmm. Ads in the comic books. And when I was a kid, I used to order that stuff. And there was also stuff that you get in those ads. Sometimes they had like little contests. And the stuff that you're ordering would not hardly be worth the postage, but it was something to do and to wait for, something to look forward to. I don't know what I did with a lot of that stuff.
You didn't get one of them capuchin monkeys or anything, did you? You really, like, you actually order monkeys through.
Oh, you mean the squirrel monkeys?
Uh-huh.
No, you can buy them in the pet store anyway.
What about the
sea monkeys? Sea monkeys. Yeah, brine shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, they don't work out because what they don't tell you is brine shrimp, you need to keep them cool.
Mm.
And so,
did you get any x-ray specs?
No, I didn't get the x-ray specs. I got a lot of Dick Tracy stuff.
Like the two-way wrist radio?
Yeah, I had one of those. But the thing about that was, is you had to have somebody else. And the one I ordered was a string model. The thing that you would set a watch with, the stem, came out and it was a string. And if somebody else had one, because the top popped up, there was a little catch on the other one. And it was the same thing as the two tin cans, you know. But I got the periscope, and I got the Dick Tracy gun. It was a squirt gun. They'd always show it. It would look kind of like a James Bond Beretta or something. And then when you got it, it was one of those little things. You pulled the end off and put water in to shoot it. You squeezed it. It was real. And I think I paid a quarter for that plus the postage and stuff. I felt pretty bit, man.
Yeah. But yeah, that's what I ended up doing too, is since we didn't have a lot of money, when I would buy a comic, I read everything. Read the credits, I read the ads, I read the copyright information. And then today when people are like, how do you know all this stuff? Because I read the comics. I mean, I read the comics.
Yeah, so, I wasn't interested in copyright, and I wasn't interested in the credits. But the ads, and I would go over the art over and over and see, because you would start thinking about it and then decide at some point that there's some detail in the art you missed. Because let's face it, you know, the writing is not that great and they don't take a lot of time to think things out. And if you actually read it and remember it, you start dissecting it in your head later, which I guess you would call savoring the comic. If you found some hole, or you thought you found some hole, you would decide that it had to be in the artwork, and you'd have to study every page very close to see if there was something hidden in there. Very seldom there was. I don't know what your experience with it was, but every once in a while there'd be some little thing that you missed that you said, hey, that's pretty interesting. Like, I don't know if you ever noticed, but every once in a while there'd be like a little gap between the black and the blue and the rag that it's printed on, and they would write little things in these little spots.
Yeah, sometimes. I think the Marvel comics, they would do little jokes and stuff in the margins. Yeah.
Yeah, that would definitely add to your time with the comic book. But, it, you know, and back in the early days, I would save the comic books because the trip back home, I might run out. I would panic over running out of comic books in the car. And my mother would have to give me the money. Most of the time, I think when I was growing up, I didn't even have an allowance. They would set an allowance, but I never. It wasn't until I went to military school where somebody else was controlling the allowance that I got it every week.
Yeah.
You know, I can remember cleaning the bathroom for my mother, you know. I think I got paid a quarter for that. And mowing the lawn, I think I got paid 50 cents. But she didn't always have that coin, because that was back in the days that she drove this 55 DeSoto and she pulled into the gas station and got a dollar's worth. Of course, back then was 5-6 gallons dollars worth. You think about that. You pull into a gas station and there's a guy washing your windshield, checking your fluids, being very courteous, all for the dollar. You hand him a dollar and say, I want a dollar's worth. It's kind of hard to imagine in this world.
A very different world, yeah.
Yeah. And it was like that for a long time, up until the time I started driving small motorcycles and cars and stuff. But one of my first jobs was semi-self-service gas station. They had these big gas stations, Hancock's and Texgas. I worked for Texgas. I was, you know, 16, something like that. But we did the same thing. But that was because it was, I guess because we didn't sell tires and stuff like that. They kind of considered those self-serve gas stations. But they were full service. I mean, we just didn't do all that other stuff. Yeah, there wasn't that much money around. That was in the days, you know, if you got paid $40 a week, you were doing all right. You know, so for a kid to have a quarter, all you got to do is figure a 40-hour week. How is that compared to $40?
Right.
My own father dressed like they did in I Spy. He had a skinny belt and a skinny tie.
In 2018.
Oh, we believe the secret agents had all that stuff, man. And some of that stuff did exist. The scopes on the guns and Man from U.N.C.L.E. They were supposed to be infrared scopes, and they were.
Your mission, should you choose to accept it.
My son comes over with his microphone and a digital board and computer, and he wants to bond over things, and since we both watch films, that's what we bond over.
started out to be over James Bond, but he heard somebody else was doing that. So we're bonding over any kind of spy.
Secret agent man, Wild Wild West. The Avengers was on American TV, but it didn't go over. It's not really something I think most Americans could understand. British invasion may have begun, but America had to catch up to the humor of it.
Bonding Agents, the father and son spy-fi podcast.
Spy-fi?
Your assets.
Old dude.
The Ollie Frank.
And the program's about whatever he tells me it is. Spies and science fiction all rolled up into one.
Available to Shout Engine and the Internet Archive, to iTunes, and similar podcatchers.
The most provocative part of our man Flint is the fact that he lives with like five women. That is what would bend people. Anybody watching the movie at that time would be going, oh, whoa.
Bonding Agents is a Rogue Spine podcast.
I forgot to ask you when we were talking about comic book stuff last time. Which of the Marvel movies do you like?
People seem to think that Ghost Rider stunk, and I liked it.
Both of them?
Yeah. So.
Well, you're an established Ghost Rider fan at this point, though. So that may have contributed,
well,
too.
Well, I'm a Fantastic Four fan, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I was never a big Captain America fan, but I liked those movies. So.
What did you think about the Fantastic Four movies, though?
I liked them.
All of them?
Yeah.
Even the last one?
Well, I mean, because I don't. When you say that. Sometimes you may be talking about more than I am. I'm not talking about any of the animated or any of that.
No. I mean, I know that you've seen the Tim Story movies that were done earlier in the 2000s.
Right.
They had Jessica Alba and Michael Chiklis.
Right.
Those guys. But what about the one that they did last year with Miles Teller and Michael
B.
Jordan?
And I was surprised I liked it because, to tell you the truth, I liked the original actors and I liked the job that they did. And I didn't think going into it I was going to like it, but yeah, I did like it.
Can you compare the two different sets of Fantastic Fours? Like, what did you like of one versus the other?
I don't think you can compare.
Yeah.
Because
they're very different tonally.
They're very, very different. The characters, like Johnny in this last one, he was much more over the top than the comic books are in there. I think those others were more in the realm of the comic book because I was a Fantastic Four reader when I was a kid, and I thought they captured that tone.
The familial tone and the...
To me, their acting and lines, the personality of the characters, seem to be in line with one another. And yes, I think Jessica Alba looks good, but going into it, I remember thinking, how is Jessica Alba going to pull off that part? I couldn't see her. And she was different, but at the same time, I felt it was still in line with the character.
I can also say I really enjoyed looking at Jessica Alba in that movie.
Oh, yeah. She did. You know, I just saw her in a recent movie. And
probably Mechanic Resurrection?
Jason Statham? That was it. And another movie I didn't think I was going to like because, you know, I've got those other Mechanics, which were just remakes. And that's what I thought this was going to be. And, of course, it wasn't. It wasn't a remake. It was a completely different story.
And, of course, that's where Captain America got his start.
Where what?
You realize that the same actor who played Johnny Storm plays Captain America, Chris Evans.
Well, yeah. Oh, you're saying as far as jobs go?
Yeah, it's the same actor.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Okay, sure. If you want to say it that way, I guess. I never even thought of it that way. It just never dawned on me, you know?
Well, because the way he plays the two different characters, I mean, they're two completely different characters.
Well, of course they are. One is all high on himself and a daredevil by nature, and the other one is kind of an empathetic guy that has to learn to, and never acquires that head bigger than he is. You know, he just, you know, Captain America is the kind of guy that does what he's got to do.
What did you think about Dr. Doom? Because they take, again, liberties in both those movies with the comic book Dr. Doom.
Dr. Doom, since it was a 3D movie.
The newer one from 2015, yeah.
The action was real fast, and I thought that some of that, because I didn't see it in 3D, would look good in 3D. But overall, I thought it was not up to par as a 3D movie. But then again, I'm not that
that critical of those movies. I thought the movie, actually, I probably thought the second one was better than the first one, but not enough to matter to me to point it out. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. So you were cool with how they portrayed Doom in both the movies, or the three movies, I should say, because we're talking, you know, they did two and then they did the one.
Yeah, I guess, but then again, you know, I don't really feel that Dr. Doom is, well, I don't know. In the movie versions, I think he's a little bit more nuts, I guess you would say. You know, in the comic books, he was rather cold, but he wasn't exactly nuts. And he really comes across nuts in the
movie. Yeah. Especially the newer one.
Very much so, yeah.
Any of the other ones you like?
What?
Of the Marvel movies or the comic book movies in general?
I generally like the Marvel movies, and with me, it's not a comic book snob thing. As you know, I was never into comic book art, necessarily. Outside of Stan's little comments and stuff in some of the books, I never really paid much attention to the art of comic books. You know, to me, they were a picture book with words.
So when you say they're too artistic, though, what do you mean?
Stuff like soft focus and erasing background, so your focus is on the two people or the one person that the director thinks you ought to be paying attention to. I don't like being led around like a dead gum dog or a horse or something.
Mm.
You know, give me some credit, man. I mean, it's like you're saying, you know, the audience is an idiot, and I'm making my film idiot proof. You're going to see my brilliance whether you want to or not. I'm going to make you like it. I get that feeling with a lot of directors, and it really does agitate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're looking at a comic book and there's more to the scene than, I mean, you know, if they're painting Superman's face right up against it and then there's crap behind them, you can see everything in that picture. They don't have to blur that out. Why do they have to do it in a dead gun movie?
So what are your favorite of those superhero movies, though?
Huh?
Do you have any favorites specifically that you hanker for or go back to the most?
Look, the best I can say about that is I really do believe the Captain America movies are done better than any of the rest of them. The Iron Man movies are okay. That last Iron Man movie left something to be desired. But then again, I just kind of accept it for what it is, and I'm not all that critical of it. But yeah, I noticed some things.
Yeah.
But
the last Iron Man made a lot of money, and it seemed like people liked it, but everybody I know didn't.
I liked the movie okay, but I'm just telling you, when the movie ended, I felt kind of let down.
Yeah.
It was more of a feeling than anything. And I'm not even sure if you could point to any certain thing. I am getting kind of tired of these running themes. Yeah, the comic books had running themes, but they didn't run them and run them and run them until they run them in the ground. You know, it was something like a Dr. Doom that popped up every once in a while. You know, there was other things they did, and the world didn't end every dadgum time. Years and years and years ago, I worked with the guy. He was a simple man that was originally from Chicago. He didn't like Star Trek. And the reason why, and we're talking about the era by the time he and I kind of parted ways, not actually parted ways, but how people drift apart. You're probably talking about the return of Spock, you know? But he didn't like the Star Trek because they always got away with it. Well, even in Star Trek, that is something that kind of irritates me. I get tired of the fact that, you know, every time I turn around, they have to destroy the Enterprise every time. I thought the point was the Enterprise didn't get... That was always the point in the TV series.
Yeah.
Well, in Marvel movies, it's like the world's got to end every dadgum time.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is left unscathed. The fact that the superheroes make it out and their friends and family didn't die seems to be the point.
Right.
When I thought the point was saving the world. You know, don't let the bad guy destroy the city. You know, at least leave a couple of the neighborhoods. You know, they'll get, you know, you leave a couple, maybe better people will move in there. But then again, you were talking about the scene in Doc, you know, the action in that, the big action scene at the end of Doctor Doom was pretty cool, okay?
Which one?
Where all hell is breaking loose.
But like in the first one where they fight him in the city streets, or the newer one where they're fighting him on the alien planet?
Yeah.
This is, okay, the newer one.
Yeah, where they, you know, and the fact that, you know, you're talking about Elsewhere kind of negates the fact that the Earth isn't being destroyed. Uh-huh. That's all right. At least you're going somewhere else. You're not destroying Chicago or New York or whatever, you know, because they may use different names, but you know where it's supposed to be going on at. Mm-hmm. They're not tearing up the freeway with little kids and people trying to get to work being killed just because you have to fight them on the freeway.
Right.
And if there was a movie that let me down, that would have been it. But still, I enjoyed the movie, and it was funny for what it was. I mean,
did you see Civil War already?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw Civil War. It was all right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, good action scene towards the end. But I don't really take, I can't be critical of those movies because, like comic books, I don't take them serious. They're entertainment, and I'm entertained, and that's good enough.
You like the DC stuff?
Yeah, it's fine. There are parts of them that hack me off, but I can't like everything. I can't like every little bit of every little movie. You just got to take it as a whole. I don't separate that stuff out. And again, like I'm telling you, the writing to me is suffering. Every one of the films just about that we're discussing could have been a lot better. It's almost like for expediency, they chunked the movie off, or perhaps they are writing for 12, 13, 14 year olds. I don't know. But you'll know when I tell you I don't watch it and I don't care to watch it, that you'll get your answer right there when I say that.
You like Guardians?
Oh, yeah, I can't wait for the next Guardian. Dad, gum. No, okay, all right, there you go. There's my favorite. Guardians of the Universe was just great. I mean, I even bought the soundtrack. And I can't wait for the next one. You betcha. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you better hope that don't come 3D, because I'll be asking that for next Christmas.
Did you get the original in 3D?
No. And I've watched it enough that I can tell you, I don't care. There are parts of it that I think would look great in 3D, but they didn't. It works all right. And I've got it on DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell when I watch a DVD whether I even think it'd be good in Blu-ray. And a lot of that 3D stuff, I know I don't want it in 3D and I don't want it on Blu-ray. Because I got a couple of, including DC stuff. If you know, I'm real careful about DC stuff. I got a couple up here in 3D. I think it's the Avengers movie. I can't remember which one. I have to look up there.
I remember you being critical of the Avengers 3D.
Yeah, right. Okay. Whenever I watch it, I watch the DVD because I got all three.
Yeah.
I've got the 3D, the regular Blu-ray, and the DVD.
Mm-hmm.
The DVD is the best because even in Blu-ray, man, its photography in it just sucks. And it only gets worse the more clear it is. So I always watch the DVD.
Yeah, I definitely find a lot of movies work better muddier. Something I get with the comics, too, is everybody wants to go back to the old comics and reprint them on the glossy paper with the super bright colors. And some books just don't need to look like that. Some books are just so damn garish like that.
What are you talking about?
Well, like in comic books, you know, the old comics were printed on newsprint, which is almost gray or it turns brown, what have you. And so they have those really bright colors to counteract for the paper quality. The paper's like you got.
Oh, is that why they did it? I just thought they wanted it in bold colors.
Right.
I know they used a lot of black.
Yeah, yeah. So what they've done, though, is they put it on nice, glossy magazine paper now, and they'll take
those. Because, you know, comic books were made to be read anywhere, and if it's on glossy paper, you can't read that.
Yeah, and also it makes it...
Overhead lighting would be a problem, I think.
Yeah, and it makes it... It can be, yeah, actually. But also, it's because the colors are so freaking bright, they're just so garish, and I don't think they were ever intended to be that bright, and sometimes it's like, guys, you need to tone it down or recognize that you're adapting from a... You know, sometimes you have to go in there and recolor this stuff, or you need to do something to mute the colors, because it's just too much. Sometimes it looks better muddier, basically. And the same thing works with DVD versus Blu-ray. Sometimes
because the Blu-ray, you know, your 3D is on Blu-ray anyway, so it can get that HD. I can tell you, some of that CGI is not that great.
Yeah. It's amazing to me that you can watch, like, the Apes movies, the new Apes movies, and you've got scenes full of monkeys that aren't really there. And that looks fantastic. You would totally swear those were real monkeys. And then they'll do these other movies that are bigger budget, that have a lot more attention paid to them, and it looks like shit.
Well, it's also amazing to me how they can totally CGI a person, and you won't even know it's a CGI person. And then they'll show the dog on next to him that where it's CGI, and you can tell that's a CGI dog.
Right,
you know,
they put the work in one place and not the other.
Yeah, you know, what's with that? I don't get it. Seems to me the same technology that works on people would work on the damn dog. And the bigger the animal, the worse it gets, too. Pay attention, you'll know what I'm talking about. I've seen elephants that looked as gray and plastic as that Bond did.
I can still remember how that music used to make me smile.
This is Rock and Roll Radio. Come on, let's rock and roll with the Ramones.
Okay. Are you going to make a new intro for this?
I'm here to talk about one song, so here I go.
Welcome to One Song Each.
This podcast is going into a song.
Whoever's with us, but usually the three of us, Diablo Frank,
Illegal Machine, Mr. Fix-It.
We're going to take a few minutes to talk about a song.
One song.
Each of us will bring one song to the table.
So we're just going to pick a song and talk about it.
Choose a random song without consulting the others and without picking a theme. No themes.
Except for the times when we'll pick a theme.
Well, we'll tell you if we're going to pick.
Generally speaking.
Sometimes we talk about the artist's career overall. Sometimes we talk about a particular album.
You can either be technical or more intimate.
There's no prescribed link. There's no prescribed content.
Randomly pulled from our brains.
Do you play the song itself?
And we play the song for each other and then comment with a story, an anecdote.
The actual meaning of the song or more history.
Either what the song means to them or a life experience that was the soundtrack to.
What it triggers in your memory.
All right, you guys want to hear my song?
I think it's probably one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard.
I'm in the middle of this parking lot, and I just start dancing. That's great, new
way, that's great. It sort of became our song.
I
turned up
the radio. I will never in my life forget that performance.
I want to talk about what I think is the greatest American love song. Do you like
good music? If you don't love the blues, you have a hole in your soul.
What happens when we rap about, like, the actual world? And people are like, what? Now I like
the path to bike. But because of the mood of the song, it made me feel sad. I felt this melancholy. And even after the song was over with, that melancholy stayed with me.
After that, every time I got in any kind of relationship and the girl would break my heart, this is the song I crawl back to.
This is a Roll Twine podcast.
That's One Song Each, and it's a very interesting concept. Rock and roll and drift away.
Real quick, go check out the Spider-Verse movie. That movie is fucking phenomenal. It's right up, like, SJW bullshit you're going to love, dude. I'm just going to tell you one thing, and I'm not ruining the movie for you. There is a scene. Well, you... No. The mother's Hispanic. You know that, right? Grace, okay. She speaks Spanish on the screen. And I took my boy with me, and he looked over and said, she spoke Spanish. I heard that several times in the theater where kids really were freaked out that a character was speaking Spanish. He spoke Spanish. And I was just like, whoa, that was cool.
One of the reasons why I was interested is I was reading a review of the movie On the Root, which I think it was The Root. And it's a black website. It's mostly black men who write for it. There's some women, but it's mostly these like jet guys. And so the writer was saying that he had expected to hate the movie. He was going in thinking this is going to suck. And he was won over in part by how black it was. That it reminded me a lot of seeing Black Panther and being shocked at how much he saw his culture actually reflecting the movie and not just being tokenism. And also, again, the Latin element, that there's more Spanish spoken in that movie than pretty much any other American movie, you know, in recent memory. I'm interested. I'm just not a Spider-Man fan. So that's, and I'm not a big CGI. I don't really like computer generated animation movies. I'm not a Pixar
Pixar guy.
That's the thing, though. This animation is not Pixar. This is literally moving artwork. I'm telling you, there were scenes that I got a little teary-eyed because I was like, that is so beautiful to look at. The way this, the motion has happened, it is so beautiful. Everyone around me was just blown away how good it was. Like, I was shocked. I like Spider-Man. I'm not a huge Spider-Man guy. I like Spider-Man. And even I was like, damn, this was actually really, story was engaging. Characters were great. All the characters, you know, they did their little bits. It was fun. When we walked out of, people were clapping as the movie ended. Even the stinger, people were losing their shit. I was like, I was surprised. And so I can't say enough good things. I was shocked how much, I saw the previews and I'm like, the animation looks weird. Like, I'm going to get annoyed by that. Your brain adjusts to what it's doing and then you accept it and then you fall into it. It's one of those things where it forces you to accept what it is and then you have to fall into it. You can't fight it. If you fight it, you're not going to enjoy it. I was surprised how much I enjoyed it. And I know you are. I can already tell you're going to be like, well, you know, it's actually pretty good. You're not going to praise it, but you'll like it.
Okay. It's a movie about multidimensional Spider-Man. It's a hard sell for me, but I'm still, because it's been so heavily praised, I'll probably check it out. All right, so we've got a lot of mail to go through. Let's see where we're at. We're going through the image files first. We got a gift from Chris at Bad Books for Beginners saying thank you, featuring art by the great John Romita Sr. We'll put that up on the blog. Something from Comic Book Dude 85. It's an Office tweet. Let's see. It was a gift from The Office, I believe, was what it was. Let's see. Caroline Wells sent us a Zoolander, I believe, gift. It features, what's his name?
Zoolander.
Yeah, the dude, though.
Ben Stiller?
Ben Stiller, thank you. Then we got from the Grave Girls podcast a Stan Lee gift saying amazing. Gregory Litchfield sent us a Stan Lee gift saying enough said. IG88 sent us J. Jonah Jameson image saying thanks for the mention. Have a great day, everyone. I think it's from one of the cartoons. Geeks to Me Radio sent us a Stan Lee Excelsior gift, or GIF as the creator would say. Odell Abner Dracula sent care of Mr. Fixit images from Spectacular Spider-Man number 162 through 163, which he was referencing in a previous episode. Cadaver and Jackal Spider-Man. Yeah, okay. Let's see. Then Richard G. wrote, always thrilled to learn of new people who love pop culture stuff and podcasts. Thank you from everyone at strangecorpseposse.blogspot.canada. I don't remember what the image was, though, but we'll throw it up on the blog. So as far as our Facebook attentions, we got mentions from Ali Batts, DeBesh, Derek William Crabb, Gautam Shioran, Keechee Baker, Richard Field, and Ryan Daly.
Our first comment comes from Joe Kushner. Thanks for the shout out. Looks like a lot of loves of the old comics.
Here.
Hello, I am learning to read. Our next comment comes from Ali Batts. Bill Everett, Stan, Todd McFarlane, Jim Lee, and Frank Miller. That's in reference to
the Mount Rushmore of Marvel Comics.
Oh, yeah.
And let's see. Frank Miller is definitely a solid one. I understand she's a Daredevil fan, so that would definitely track. So let's see. Bill Everett. Wait, that's five. Ali Batts cheated. You're disqualified. Bill Everett, I guess because of the creation of Human Torch. Or no, Bill Everett did Submariner. Who did Human Torch? Boros, right?
You just got batted.
I got batted. Okay. So do we want to rate in the pros or cons, Mr. Joe Fixit, on this one?
Of?
Let's see. We're talking about a Mount Rushmore consisting of Bill Everett, Stan Lee, Todd McFarlane, Jim Lee, and Frank Miller.
Oh, absolutely. Stan Lee, yes. Jack Kirby.
No. He said, she said, we already listed ours. It's, what'd you think of hers?
For writers or just creators?
Creators of Marvel.
Each their own.
Okay.
I like the outside the box thinking with Bill Everett.
Well, and kudos for Jim Lee and Frank Miller as well. So 80s, 90s representation, maybe a little bit more of a generational span there.
I was a big proponent of putting someone from the 90s X-Men days on there because mm-hmm. that was just 80s, well, 90s, you know, to explode. This was while we were, you know, yeah. vouching for Claremont a little bit, but I think Jim Lee is... He's synonymous with the Marvel comics or what?
And the image style and X-Men Revolution. Totally. The top selling book of all time.
Started at Marvel Comics. So.
And then Frank Miller, of course, evolved the medium through the mature stylings of Daredevil. So, yep. Yeah. Let's see. We've got DeBesh throws in Stan, Jack, Steve Ditko, and Dwayne McDuffie. That's another outside the box choice there. Now, McDuffie, reminded me what McDuffie did at Marvel. Because I really associate him more with DC now through Milestone and through the Justice League cartoon. I know he did Damage Control. I know he wrote Black Panther at one point for like a miniseries, but he got a start at Marvel, of course. But I'm struggling to remember any like really substantial books that he wrote for Marvel.
Yeah, hey, DeBesh, come over here and elaborate, bro. Oh, then Dana Stewart says, DeBesh, we need a bigger mountain. Add Manilow, Buscema, and Trimpy. I'm assuming that's John, not Sal. Sorry, Sal. Shots fired.
I like Sal Buscema.
Look, I do too, but he's not Chuck. He's not Big John. Anyway, come on, buddy. Our next comment comes from Alan Middleton. Rushmore number 4, Claremont. I'm not a huge fan, but he made the X-Men A-listers. I am the exact same boat. I'm not a huge X-Men fan. I did not like any of that stuff in the 90s. I was an Avengers guy. But even I recognize the dude was just, he just was the engineer on that locomotive for just far too long to be left off the list. Or at least that you can't, you know, you can argue him anyway.
I'll go throw in one of this. Kyle Benning wrote in, my personal Mount Rushmore would be Lee Kirby, Roy Thomas, and John Buscema. So I think A Man After Your Own Heart.
Yep.
Runners-up would be Byrne, Ditko, Mantlow, another mention of Mantlow, Lynn Wein. Great episode, fellas.
Yeah, I think Mantlow is another great outside-the-box one that you could put, because he did everything eventually, it seemed like, right?
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed Mantlow's work. I don't know about as a creator of the caliber of the other guys that have been mentioned necessarily, but I enjoy his writing more than a lot of the people. Like, I like Mantlow's stuff more than Roy Thomas, more often than not, for instance.
Here's one.
But Roy Thomas obviously contributed a lot. He was the first guy that Stanley could find that could actually write like him, so he could expand the Marvel Universe and the publishing line. So yeah, it definitely points for either way.
Did we ever... was Grunewald's name ever mentioned anywhere in any of this stuff? I think Grunewald had a pretty big imprint on...
He definitely had an imprint, yes.
Anyway, another name.
See, Odell Abner Dracula wrote in for... It has to be Romita, doesn't it? Or John Buscema. Senior, he means, of course, on the Romita front. I can't remember which one of you hates Junior Freihole, maybe. But I really love J.R. Junior's storytelling anyway. His Superman mutiny disqualifies him for Mount Rushmore in my mind. Disqualified from the top 4. In my brain, I'm thinking Kirby, Stan, Ditko, Romita Sr., and John Buscema. Maurice Severin, Jim Starlin, J.R. Jr., 2 Mount Rushmores. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I'm not really surprised
that he went Mr. Dracula Jr.
is go- well, and then he's also going heavy artist, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like John Romita Jr. I definitely see him as synonymous with Marvel, same with Romita Sr. Romita Sr. did create a lot of characters. You know, he did a lot of designs for some big ones. Wolverine and Punisher come to mind as two of the biggest characters that come out post Silver Age, and Romita designed both of them, and they're both gorgeous designs. So even the funkier cat-like Wolverine from the early days, it's still a pretty nice design. So
yeah, and I think you can argue. I mean, for me, it's a coin flip if you want to do Romita Sr. or John Buscema. I obviously lean John Buscema because he touched more of the books I read. But look, I get it.
I don't think he designed a lot of characters. Either,
I don't think
did he
did either. And that's
just drew them more.
Right. Exactly. I think he sort of took the baton from Jack and continued with Jack's characters.
Yeah, he became like the Jack of Marvel in the Bronze Age.
But he didn't create anything. He just carried on Jack's. Where you could argue that Romita had some more popular creations.
Mm-hmm. So let's see. I think maybe you gotta read this one.
Our next comment comes from Siskoid. Felt like Frank had a definite answer that he didn't give about the Marvel Rushmore, but I think Chris Claremont probably has the best claim. Now, I'm not entirely sure if I want Ditko on there, as I tend to think his contribution wasn't quite as important as Jack and Stan or even Claremont, but I realized that a personal bias... as I like neither his art nor his opinions. If I take him out of the equation, I don't really have anyone better to pawn there, though. Everyone, including Claremont, is simply standing on the big three shoulders. Loyal Romita comes closest and keeps the writer-artist balance on the mountain. I mean, I can't really disagree with any of that.
I will state for the record that I was playing devil advocate the entire time we were doing that. I always knew that Chris Claremont was the fourth guy, to my mind, for the mountain, for the same reason that you mentioned. He just created and sustained a plethora of characters that's hard to compete with. I will say that Ditko deserves it, if for no other reason, for Spider-Man, because, I mean, that's one of the greatest superheroes of all time. A DC mountain without Siegel and Schuster is something you would have to defend, because it's Superman. Right? You know, so, but he also came up with Doctor Strange. He also was one of the greats of the Silver Age that can, you know, Marvel didn't have a lot of great artists. You know, Joe Manganiello died. And I was reading one book, I think it was the Sean Howe book, The Marvel The Untold Story, where Stan let Jack draw like Jack, Steve draw like Steve, and everybody else draw like Jack. So right. I think that he was the only other great Marvel artist of the Silver Age until like some of those next generation guys started coming in, like a John Buscema, because when you can talk about like Don Heck and George Tuska and Werner Roth, it's like these guys are not people that get brought up in that same caliber. Steve Ditko has had such a huge influence on the people that came in to Marvel in the Bronze Age too. Most of the major artists that came in the Bronze Age had at least some Steve Ditko influence. And obviously the Spider-Man, who, you know, those stories were at least co-written by Ditko, influenced all the comics that came after Spider-Man came into existence. existence. So that's a huge mark to make on comic book history, and I think that it has to be acknowledged. But I also really like what Ditko did over at Charlton, which I realize isn't Marvel, but since Ditko designed most of Spider-Man's villains, and he helped to sustain characters like the Hulk and Iron Man when the original creators didn't do those books, you have to acknowledge that.
You want to do this next one?
No, because I just talked a lot about Siskoid. So the next one would be...
yeah, but I don't know what the fuck...
This is a comment from episode 85 from David Schnebly. He just saw that... I saw you linked www.lyriacomicexchange.com on your podcast. Very cool.
What does that mean?
That's exactly what he said. We posted a link, he was thanking us for having that link related to a comment.
Our next comment comes from Ryan Daly on the Universal Hulk. I didn't get a chance to comment on your Incredible Hulk episode, but I feel compelled to now because of something Frank mentioned. I think the Incredible Hulk is better than its reputation suggests and better than you guys said in the review, but it is problematic. My biggest hang-up with the movie, though, is that in the Blu-ray DVD features, there are a bunch of deleted scenes that totally should have been in the movie. There are deleted scenes between Bruce and Betty and Leonard Sampson that are great character-building moments. There's also an extended scene between General Ross and Emil Blonsky that reveals more about their characters as well as Bruce's. I would love to get or somehow make a director's cut of the film, including these deleted scenes, as well as prolonged, as long as the prologue where Bruce attempts suicide. As for the subject of this episode, Ang Lee's Hulk, I saw it once when it first came out on video. I didn't like it. I barely remember it. Even after listening to your review, I felt like I don't really know what happened in this movie.
Yeah, I agree. I liked a lot of the deleted materials from Incredible Hulk, but I liked Incredible Hulk, period. So that kind of makes me an outlier, apparently. So Richard Field on episode 88, the Ant-Man and the Wasp episode. I didn't think the movie was that bad, but I can tell you this. I did not like what they did with Janet Van Dyne. I was also hoping for more special effects with Ant-Man and the Wasp. Seems to me like the trailer spoiled too much of what happened in the movie for me, but I still liked it. Was it better than Black Panther? No, that distinction goes to Thor number 3. Ooh, shots fired. Ragnarok. This is my movie along with the latest Avengers.
Disagree. Do not like that movie. Probably.
I think all three of us put that toward the bottom of all Marvels, right?
Oh, yeah. By far the worst Marvel movie of them all. I'm a huge supporter of Marvel films, and that was just the crappiest of them all.
So, yep. given your bias about the Hulk movies, Incredible Hulk higher or lower than Ant-Man and the Wasp?
Oh, above. Jesus.
Thank you.
Dude, the Hulk. I'll give Ang Lee's above. I'd rather watch that than the fucking...
You know what? I hate both of those Hulk movies. I don't think I disagree with you. I think that there's...
Really? Wow.
There's enough weird, interesting stuff in those movies that there at least bears some sort... There's at least a weird curiosity with those. Like, I don't need to see hour and 50-minute long jerk fest over the fucking Quantum Zone or whatever. I don't need to hear, oh, it's quantum. I don't need the ghost moment where Janet Van Dyne ghosts into Paul Rudd's body. Like, I don't need
to... That was so stupid.
Makes me nauseous.
No, what... I'm telling you.
The horrible ghost character.
The moment I said, Morpheus, fuck me in the theater was when she does the E.T. moment and just, boop, we're all cured. I fucking lost it.
Walton Goggins is one that comes to mind as somebody I don't need to see in a Marvel movie ever again.
No, that dude just chewed up the scenery in that movie.
A lot of bad in that movie. Okay.
I will totally agree. I think we even said on the podcast, it seemed like all the imaginative Ant-Man and Wasp
power applications.
They were all done. Oh, except for the way overly long scene where he shrank down to kid size. That movie sucked, dude. That movie's terrible. Anyway, back to the next comment.
I feel like we had more comments, but I'm not finding them. Maybe I'm just inflating them in my mind. There's one more from Diego Halen 3. This one would be the only Marvel movie by Marvel that I haven't seen. It was good coming across this post as it reminded me that I have to add it to my watch list. Have also heard a lot about it. Once I have finished watching shows by Andy Yateman on Netflix, I can start with this one. I got to know about these new series from a link involving Netflix Muppets and also about him. So I think that might have actually been some sort of a weird solicitation thing that I scooped up by mistake.
Oh,
so moving on.
Solicitation.
Our next comment comes from loweryourcreditscore.com. Please log on to loweryourcreditscore.com. Or no, maybe a credit report? Aftermarket car warranties.
Creditkarma.com.
Would you like to hear about lowering your interest rates? Did I tell you guys this story that whenever I go ring, ring, I play a telephone game with my kid and he picks up something like it's a phone? I go, are you interested in consolidating your debt? And we all laugh and think it's funny because that's where we're at in 2019. And by the way, if a comic book company has not come up with a villain called Robo Dialer, I don't know. I mean, mean, can we tap into something that's topical, please?
There might be more of a Spawnometer villain. I think Eric Larson probably did that at some point.
Oh, right? My God, absolutely. Dude. How has Eric Larson not done Robo Dialer?
No, he's done it. There's somewhere.
Where it calls random people, and if you answer the phone, he come to your house and he kill you or something
Dude,
like
he did Jumbo, a giant shrimp. I'm sure.
I mean, he fought Trump, right?
Yeah.
Come on, dude. Where's Robo Dialer?
Or maybe Tom Skilly will get that into GoBots somehow. That'd be a good idea, too. Our Captain Marvel episode got 2 likes on Facebook from Keith G. Baker and Derek William Crabb. Retweet frantic ones include Jennifer DeRoss, Siskoid, and Talk Nerdy to Me. Keepers of the Favorites Flame include the 108 Sage, Anime Francais, Beverly G., Bill Bear, Carol Danvers at Marvelous CD, Comics Memoir, Conan the Librarian, Daniel French, Fishponius Sound Design, Daniel Lyonson, Delvin, Dark Web, Felix Leiter, Elizabeth Sparks, IG88, Ja Rule, John Horsley, Ken Barr Jr., King Dinosaur, Kirk Spencer, Liam Hoffman, Longbox Crusade, Matthew Jur, The Nerdgrounds Jake, Nicole, Nuno Quaresma, Odell Abner Dracula, Seth Briz, Sean Merrick, Slangwood Scott, Small Press Day 2019, Steve Sellers, Stockport Super, 101 Warrior for Peace Podcast, Words and Pictures, and Zena Schultz, who wrote, Cool, thanks, bud. And finally, the Mary Marvel Marching Society, 20th Century Geek, Dr. Ange, Bone Dragon Comics, the Cinebud Podcast, Collected Edition, Dirk Ashton, who wrote Thanks RSP, Fanholes Podcast, Gafgar and the Eternally Unfurnished, Gal Walks Into a Comic Shop, Geeks Gone Wild Tweet, Green Lantern HG, Gregory Litchfield, The Hammer Strikes, Random Geeky Stuff, History of Comics on Film, Iowa's Joe, Jeffrey Brown, Just in Time with J&T Baggers, Justice First Dawn, Carl Ottersberg, Keith G. Baker, Kyle Benning Likes Comics, The List Game, Man Brain Podcast, Marvel Mythos Podcast, Matt Romero, Nethead, Nexus of All, Paul Matthew Carr, Randy Caldwell, Relatively Geeky, Resurrections and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Richard Field, Richard G., Ryan Daly, Sean Michael Ortega, Secret Wars of Beyond Podcast, Stu Perrins, The Supreme Melon Intelligence, Tim Price, Tony Scipione, Trekker Talk, Xenozoic Xenophiles, and Zach Sally.
The Marvel Superheroes Podcast is in no way affiliated with or endorsed by Marvel Entertainment. All characters mentioned and audio clips employed are believed covered under fair use, with no infringement intended against their copyright holders. Views expressed in this podcast are assumed legitimate, truthful, and solely possessed by the speaker.
You belong to the Mary Marvel Marching Society. March along to the song of the Mary Marvel Marching Society. If you growl, if you groan, and your score is merely zero, do not howl, do not moan, you can be a superhero marching right along to the fighting song of the Mary Marvel Marching Society.
Emma.
Okay, so you watched Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was better. I would say it was equal to. I did like the way they expanded their character to the point where it looks like the third one's going to be a really big one.
What, did you catch the Stinger reference?
The what?
Did you catch who they're referring to in the one of the Stingers, the one with the Sovereign?
Stinger.
Yeah, you know how the Marvel movies have those little added scenes at the end of them?
After
the
credits? No, I watched credits all the way through. I saw all of it.
Right.
That's what I said. Not only did they increase all these characters, you know, and of course I think Palm is a very sexy woman, even if she is 5'7". At the end, they're giving you all these little tidbits of what you might find in the third one. I went online and I tried to look up everything about the third one. You know, all I got was the same strange crap when you're trying to find out something they don't want you to know. So,
well, yeah. I don't know if you know this, but you know, my uncle kind of got me into comics, or at least to some degree, because I think I bought some stuff on my own, but he also gave me a bunch of comics when I was really young, and a lot of the comics he gave me featured a character named Adam Warlock. I don't know if you have any familiarity with that character.
No, I'm not.
Okay, well, that's the when they show the Sovereign, the gold people, and they show that at the end, that womb thing, that pod, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
That's supposed to be Adam Warlock, who's a character that's like one of the first comic book characters I ever read about, so I'm pretty excited about him showing up in the third movie.
See, I saw it as just a twist of, since this one was all about a god, I just saw the Adam thing as a twist on that, like going along with it. But I guess, since you know that it's another character, here, then you know more than I do.
Well, yeah, and the name Adam comes from the Bible, too, because it's this first character created. It's a supposedly perfect being that was created by scientists. It is actually supposed to be a riff on Scientology or Objectivism, if I remember correctly. And then that didn't end up panning out. But, yeah, that's why he's named Adam.
You know, I see Guardians as kind of a commentary on the human condition here. You know what I mean? They use all these strange characters. If you're paying attention, there's all kinds of little quips to, you know, this is how people were, you know, being dummies right here, you know, being hypocritical and nasty to one another and that kind of crap.
I agree with you, too. The Palm Clemente or whatever her name is, the one who played Mantis, very cute.
Do what?
You were talking about liking the chick that played Mantis, right?
Oh, yeah.
Very cute.
I thought that's who it was, and when I looked up, I was right, so.
Well, it's a fairly unique name, so.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I had that girlfriend, you know, was half Russian and half Spaniard, and she's part French, part Russian, and part Korean, so.
Is there anything else on that one?
No, not really. I mean, I watched it twice. I watched it last night, and then I watched it again today when I got bored.
How'd you like the visual effect?
Well, on my screen, it looked all right. Like, in the beginning of the movie, it really did look like, in the beginning, when they're in that car, it looked like, you know, CG to me. You know, it didn't look real. It looked surreal. I did think it was kind of cool the way they made Kirk Douglas Kurt Russell, the way they made him look young, but of course it wasn't makeup, it was CG, and it was pretty obvious it was CG. And then I thought it was kind of a cheat that when they got to the God planet that, you know, his little models that he had were pretty much, you know, faceless. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
They were mannequin-like. And I thought, well, if he's the God, then, it should be more realistic. They should have faces and all that stuff. You know, I try not to get too critical on stuff like that, but I did notice it.
Mm-hmm. I liked it. I thought it was just a stylistic choice, but I really love the color palette and just the look of that world.
Well, yeah, the color palette was fine. I just don't think that CG is all there. When you put so much CG into it like that, it should be better, you know? I don't know if that was a 3D movie. It did look kind of like it was shot 3D. But,
yeah, it was.
Well, so, and, you know, that's my most critical thing about Marvel. I mean, out of all the movies they've made, the Captain Americas and that one Ghost Rider, that first one, 3D was pretty good on those. But on all the others, it kind of sucked, you know? It looked too fake. Sure, it has to do with their budgets and all that kind of crap, but I think if they're going to do stuff like that, the 3D and the CG ought to be in sync with one another and look right. But I also noticed that they didn't have so many things blurred in it.
Can tell you from movie trailers and having seen the trailer in 3D in the cinema, I think the Ragnarok is going to be up your alley in the 3D front, because what I've seen of that, the 3D's been really good.
Well, we'll see. I mean, whenever I see one that I think is going to be really good in 3D, I'll buy or get the 3D and watch it on my TV. There's not too many 3Ds that come out that I think are good enough to do that with. So, but yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm sure I'll enjoy the next one, because this is the kind of thing I really, really like. You know, it's a lot of fantasy and Banner, and it's better than the comic books. You know, the Banner between the characters is better.
Definitely better at comedy in movies than in the comic books, typically.
Well, and the comedy's just really good. I mean, it wasn't a belly laugh or anything like that, but the Mary Poppins thing I thought was really good. You know, but I do like the way that they don't understand what's going on, and then they think they understand, and they start putting that in their little insults and stuff, and it's just funny the way it turns out.
What'd you think of the music?
The music was good. In fact, I've already put the soundtrack in my Amazon box. I'm going to buy it, because there's at least three songs I think I don't have in my music. So
yeah, it seemed like it was a little bit more esoteric this time.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how I feel about, you know, I'm not a big Hasselhoff fan by any means. I certainly don't care for his music and stuff, but of course that song with him, you couldn't really tell that was David Hasselhoff. At least I didn't think could. Not that it was all that great of a song, but it was kind of interesting to me. But some of that other stuff I like, you know. I'm not sure, you know, like My Sweet Lord cut, I thought it was well done, but, you know, I still probably prefer the original. I mean, I don't see what the deal is in trying to make that cut sound like the original, you know.
I thought that was the George Harrison one.
No, it was some other band. I can't remember what it was. I don't have my iPad on my lap, so I can't look it up. I don't think it was George Harrison. It wouldn't matter anyway, because I've got the George Harrison in my music. So, you know, that's one I wouldn't be adding anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I have the Cat Stevens. I have the George Harrison. And I have Brandy, so.
Yeah, it was funny, because I knew that track, and I thought that was a bigger hit than it was, apparently. But my friends had no idea about that one, so that was a sort of a discovery for them through the movie.
Well, but the thing was is that the music was real clean. The soundtrack was real clean. A lot of times they'll do shit like that and it won't be, but the music still was clean, so any tracks you take from it's going to be clean.
Did you have the ELO song?
I think I did, because I pretty much have everything that ELO did. Let me see, I've got it in my car. I'll look at it.
Well, you don't have to go to all that trouble.
Huh?
You don't have to go to all that trouble.
Well, I'm outside anyway.
Oh, okay.
It's pleasant out here, and it's quiet, too, because there's a lot of people that left town. I was going to tell you I got this anyway. I haven't added it in my music. I got the Bill Withers Greatest Hit, and, you know, that's one of those. Every once in a while, I'll hear a song, and I'll go, I wonder if I have that. And then I'll look it up in my music, and it's not there. And so then I went and I checked. And I didn't have any of that Bill Withers stuff. So I got that. So, you know, he had four or five hits that I really liked, and I didn't have it. So now I've got those, and I can add them in.
Yeah, I've only got like three or four of his cuts myself.
You know, his other stuff wasn't all that great. I liked the style, but it was like it just wasn't up to snuff. You know, and I'm pretty sure that's why it didn't get any airplay, because it wasn't up to snuff. You know, it's kind of that jazzy, bluesy, you know, with a little bit of funk thrown into it. Plus, back, Bill Withers didn't have all that great of a voice. I mean, you know, like I checked, you know, when I listen to stuff, I wonder, you know, why this would be on a greatest hits when I never heard the song. And when you look it up, it was, you know, a minor hit, and it was, you know, a minor hit in one small location. He wasn't a crooner, and he did play in the CD. You know, he did these crooning songs, and he just didn't have the voice for it, you know. Anyway, but I'm glad I got these cuts. I mean, the four songs for what I paid for the CD is worth it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's, for me, I mean, Ain't No Sunshine, Lean On Me, Who Is He and What Is He to You, and I kind of like, I think it's called Grandma's Hands.
Those, yeah,
like,
that's one of those songs, yeah. I thought that one was a little bit boring, but I remember hearing it. I don't know. There's a new guy. I can't think of his name now, but there's this guy. He's only got a couple of CDs out, but I saw him on TV, and I go, hey, I like that, but I hadn't heard it, you know? So I checked into him, and apparently his new album's pretty damn good, so I'm probably going to be ordering the two albums that he's got, just see if there's more stuff there that I like. But, some guy, he was a street musician, and somebody heard him and said, hey, you ought to be making records, so he's made a couple.
That's cool.
Because we were talking about Vampirella before, I decided to bring you some Vampirella books I've got. That's Vampirella Crimson Chronicles Maximum. That's a collection of the old 60s strips from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Want to see if any of that did anything for you?
Yeah, it's
you might have to get.
I mean, it doesn't do anything for the, you know, magazines. Their artwork and everything was much larger. So. And of course, it was. I can just looking at these pictures, I can remember stuff just looking at it.
Like the stories or what?
Yeah. But some of them, you know, the magazine didn't. All this stuff's a lot smaller than it was in the magazine. You see, this guy always reminds me of Dr. Strange. I remember that director. Yeah, I mean, it definitely brings back memories.
Okay, and then this here is one I got in the time since we recorded. This is the Best of Vampirella Master Series Omnibus. It collects many of the best Vampirella stories from the last 30 years.
Yeah, and it's colored and everything.
some of this I'm looking at, you can just looking at the pictures, you can tell how much evolution she went through over the years. Because I think the last time I bought a Vampirella and tried to get back into it was sometime still in the 70s.
Okay, and then I also stopped you because you were starting to tell me your thoughts on a variety of superhero movies, and I figured that's something we ought to put on the microphone.
Well, I mean, you know, first off, as we were talking about, I think the Marvel TV show is kind of a ripoff. They're just boring soap opera stuff. As far as the movies go, I think they cheat you. I think a lot of their in a lot of those films, the CGI is not up to today's standards. When they're shooting things in 3D, a lot of these directors don't seem to understand what 3D is all about. You know, they're still doing the artsy fartsy, trying to blur out the background and sharpen, enhance the foreground until it's surreal. That's not what 3D is about. 3D is about putting you in their will. They just don't get it. And I'm sure part of it is budgeting, but part of it is these directors that just don't know what the hell they're doing. You know, if you don't understand 3D, don't direct 3D. Shoot a regular film and make it a good film.
I seem to recall you especially dislike Joss Whedon's 3D. The Avengers movies?
Yeah. Well, no. Well, wait a minute. Okay. Well, the Captain Americas are better. Okay? I like the Avengers movies as far as the, you know, the storylines and the acting and that kind of stuff, but the cinematography is all screwed up. The CGI is kind of screwed up. Yeah, and the Captain Americas, I mean, you know, I got 3D equipment. I'm into 3D. I'm not going to waste my money on something that shouldn't be shot in 3D. I mean, personally, I think they would have been better. The Iron Man aren't so bad. They're pretty great. I thought that Wonder Woman was not only a good movie, but the cinematography and everything looked like I might be interested in that for a 3D.
I've actually got the 3D version with me, so if you want to check that out later, we can.
Hell yeah, we'll charge up the glasses and check it out. As a whole, I mean, let's face it, if Marvel wants to be in the movie business, you need to be more dead bang than one quarter of your films coming out right.
Well, but I mean, when you say one quarter, what aspect are you saying the...
I'm telling you that just the production of the films is crap.
Mm.
I mean, they get good actors, they have decent storylines, but then they blow it. I mean, it'd be better as a radio show.
So, like, which ones would you say they really blew it on then?
Well, the second Ghost Rider.
Well, and that one, it's kind of tricky because you know that there's the ones that Marvel Studios themselves makes, and then the ones that got basically licensed out to other studios when they were going through bankruptcy. And the Ghost Riders are produced by Fox, as I recall.
Okay, and the first one was pretty great all the way around. Mm-hmm. And I liked the story more or less of the second one.
Mm-hmm.
But they just did not bring the rest of the film along to match it, you know?
I actually liked the second one better. I thought it had a nice edge to it. I liked the story, and I liked Idris Elba's character. So, but I actually thought both Ghost Riders are pretty solid. They're underrated, I would say.
Well, and I would agree with that.
I think a lot of people just slag on it because of Nick Cage.
Well, and let's face it, old Nick needs to lighten up a bit. I mean, he just always wants to be so damn dark, just like Sutherland. Fuck that, man. If you can't smile every once in a while, you ain't worth watching. I mean, you know, what makes or breaks a lot of these movies, no matter how serious they are, is the comedy relief they put in.
Mm-hmm.
And without comedy relief, you know, I don't want to. I'm not really into drama.
Mm-hmm.
There's enough drama around me just walking through life. I want some kind of relief from the drama. I know you don't really agree with that. You get into the dramatic crap, but I don't. You can walk any street in Houston these days and just pay attention. There's drama all around you. You don't need a film to throw more into your face. When a movie's over with, I want to feel exuberant or happy. You know, I don't need that crap. And the same is said in literature. I've read most of the world's best literature.
Blockbuster. Did it when I was a child. So I have a grasp of what is and what is not. In dramatic literature, the writing carries you away to another place. But a lot of times it carries you to a place you don't want to be. It's just as simple as that. Life's just too short for that kind of crap. And superheroes for an adult. I mean, we've already discussed this in other situations. I'm not superstitious. I've been around even when I was a kid. You know, one of the things we used to do is grave stomping. And that's what we called it. But basically, it was hanging out in cemeteries at night. You know, smoking cigarettes, and laying on graves. It was on the floor, I think. It fell off. We just hang out all night doing what kids do in the cemetery. If some dummy come along or a group of kids come along, we'd have some fun. I had this buddy. His name was Stan. I'm not going to tell you his last name, but his name was Stan. He liked to call himself the Hood. His sister had died in a fiery automobile accident, and she was buried in a cemetery that wasn't all that far from where we lived. And we'd walk over there and hang out at night. And he actually felt quite at home, right, real close to her grave. I mean, like right across from it, was a bench, like one of them raw iron park benches. And Stan invariably would always go over to that bench. And there was a couple of times he'd fall asleep. I couldn't get him up. I'd just have to leave him there. I was going to go home. I sure as hell wasn't going to sleep on that wet grass. I mean, he had the only bench. Now, of course, I was in a war. You know, there was one time I had to guard this place where they're putting all these bodies. You know, I was there, I don't know, 4 hours in the wee hours of the morning with all these dead bodies. Every once in a while, there'd be a sound coming out of them boxes. But I've been around, you know, I've had to be around dead. There was a time in my life I believed in ghosts and stuff, but I don't anymore. I know that doesn't sound like it equates to superhero, but heck, if I can't believe in ghosts and monsters, how am I supposed to believe in a superhero? To me, superheroes in a way are clowns. And my imagination can take me into that world, and for a while I can forget, you know, these people couldn't possibly be existing. This is all a pile of crap. But sometimes knowing all that during what I'm watching makes it all the more fun. So I don't take that stuff serious. But in some cases, and surely anybody that's read comic books knows this, sometimes political views of the time, they get in there. Sometimes prejudices and views on life, they get in there. To me, that's kind of what makes it interesting. And so, like, in the case of the Avengers, you look at them, and they're a very group of people. But at their base of every character, the ones that are supposed to be the good guys, they're all clean-cut patriotic people. They're all kind of right-wing Republican.
You think the Avengers lean right wing?
Well, of course they do. When you say right wing, you're talking about warrior, or, you know, at least financing warriors. So of course they're right wing. But then they have the liberal side. Hey, let's face it. If your lieutenants are on your forehead, that makes you kind of a minority, don't it? They get along with minority. Color doesn't make any difference. I mean, in X-Men, that I'm telling you, when you're talking X-Men, basically you're talking about the human condition. Basically, they're telling you that you're a bunch of bigots. They're the only ones that aren't bigots, you know? You know, my girlfriend's got feathers in her tutu. which is probably one of the things I like about the X-Men. Mm-hmm. But then...
And you said you've been liking The Gifted too, didn't you? Or have you been watching
that? No. I agreed with you that was a nasty soap opera.
I hadn't seen enough of it to know. The Gifted?
Oh, no. I'm sorry. You were talking about the Inhumans.
Right.
Yeah, no.
You were saying you had
an opinion on that. I watched 2 Inhumans and I just couldn't stand it. It was just that bad. The Gifted, I have watched, but they are pretty much getting on my... They're really sitting there on the edge of my list. I'm not going to mess with that crap no more. And, of course, I record everything because I cannot stand a commercial. So, you know, I watch the stuff commercial-free. That's one of the reasons why I can stand to watch some of it. Because there's a lot of stuff out there. It's just not all that great. What's interesting to me is like the Fantastic Four. Okay, here's these guys. guys. They're all too busy and too smart to really even stop to think about prejudice. And then all of a sudden, they find themselves part of a minority. And you see it. The writers just can't help but go there. A lot of the show is talking about bigotry and being minority, you know, and trying to rise above all that. Poor Ben's got it the worst. I mean, you know, it reminds me of that Eddie Murphy movie where the guy wakes up and discovers he's black. Well, that's Ben, and he just struggles with it. He did in the magazine, and they made sure it was the same situation in the movie. So, and of course, you know, to get away from it showing as prejudice, it's all about a girl. Kind of like throwing his prejudice onto somebody else that he cares about. That's what's interesting in it, is seeing motivation, seeing the subject they're talking about, and at the same time, they're skirting all around it. But the Avengers, I mean, you know, talk about a rat pack. I mean, and the way they write all that crap, they're always trying to write strife in it. You know, the friction between the... And really, I don't even like that. I mean, I don't care if two of them don't particularly like each other. What I care about is the friction. It's just tedious to me. You know, it's one thing if two guys don't like each other. They make trouble. See, in war, you find yourself with people that you've never associated with. And at the same time, you've got to depend on those people. Now, the question is not whether you like them or you don't like them. The question is, will they have your back? Will they keep you from getting killed? And that's what becomes important. Anybody that's been in a war situation will tell you the same thing I just said. And all of these characters are constantly in war. They're warriors. They're fighting a war. If you want to point out something ridiculous, especially when it's something that you view and not something that you read, is this good gunfighter thing they got going where they'll throw you 100 feet in the air and slam you across the wall on the thing, but the whole idea is they know that won't kill you. The last thing in the world they want to do is kill. Now, some of this stuff recently, the whole idea seems to be to kill. But the heroes never seem to really want to do it. And in fact, if you want to look at an honest character, it's Captain America. Because, hey, he fought in World War II. He wasn't trying to take prisoners. He was trying to kill. He's an honest guy. The rest of them are a bunch of fakes.
Well, I was curious, too, because you're leading toward the Avengers being right wing. Do you think Cap is?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, of course, most of his enemy always seems to be the German. You know what I mean? If you pay attention to it, that's really his enemy. He wasn't so much a Pacific fighter as he was a European fighter. And that was all about the German. No, he was born of war. The whole idea behind him is world war. He wasn't around in World War I. He's a World War II soldier. Yeah, he's right wing. You know, but right wing is about being war. See, in politics, people get things all diluted. We were talking about that earlier. Somebody hearing me talk about guns and war and stuff might think that I was right wing. Well, I guess in a way I am, but I'm a social liberal, okay? But Captain America is not a social liberal. How many ethnics does he hang out with? None.
What about the Falcon?
What about the Falcon? That is a job-related thing. He is a co-worker, not a buddy. Think about it now.
No, I mean, they met because they were both training at the Avenue of the Americas, or what do you call it? The waiting pool, what do you call that in Washington, D.C.?
The waiting pool.
You know, the pool. They were circling the pool. The reflecting pool. Yeah, thank you. And so then they met by happenstance because they were both jogging around that same place, and then Cap kind of befriends them, or vice versa, because Cap's still having some issues with the war, and he's having issues with adapting.
And you're talking about Sam works in that area, right?
Yeah. Oh, well, you're talking about in the comics?
Yeah.
Oh, and even in the comics, though, they met. They were both on the same island, and they both were trying to combat the Red Skull.
What are you talking about? They're both from the same island, Captain America.
No, but they were on they met on an island while they were having to deal with the Red Skull.
Well, but you see, they're compatriots of arms. Okay.
But it's by choice. It's not like they got thrown together. It's like they choose to hang out with each other, and they're friendly.
But son, when you form an alliance, your grandfather used to tell me most of the businesses he was in is basically a salesman, but the truth is, so he was more than just a salesman. But he used to say most of the people that he associated with, he called his friend, and some of them were his friends. But he also used to say, not everybody in the business likes me, but they all respect me. People don't understand respect nowadays. I mean, not as a general rule. They see respect as somehow, they see courtesy as respect, or I guess I want to say. But, you know, maybe I am overthinking it. Maybe you can say they were friends. But the truth is, they're compatriots that aren't. And it's just like I was talking about in war, being thrown together with somebody or put together with somebody. And there's something about them that you trust. In other words, you trust them to have your back. And you figure, well, it's a good idea. You know that movie Cheyenne Social Club? It begins with Jimmy Stewart getting this letter saying he's got an inheritance. And then, Christ, just flew right out of my head. The guy, they're working together as cowboys. Fonda.
Oh, okay, Henry Fonda.
Henry Fonda. When Jimmy Stewart just throws his saddle up on his horse and starts heading across the nation to go see about his inheritance, old Henry Fonda does the same thing. And he talks for 1,000 miles. There's one point where they've been riding for, I don't know, 500 miles. I can't remember how far it was. And he says, Harley, why are you here? And he says, well, we've been riding together for 15 years or whatever the heck it was. And he says, yeah, Harley, but why are you here now? We've been riding for 600 miles and you have not closed your mouth once. But it was like he was never really invited, but he's always there anyway. So in a way, they were friends. And in another way, his friend is nothing but a tag-along nuisance. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, I don't seriously dissect superheroes in that way.
Mm-hmm.
They're fictitious, and anybody that's ever read comic books, in the movies, they tend to have a little more cohesion than they do in the comic book. But like with the Bible, if you look too close, you're going to find too many discrepancies. You know what I mean? That's why I put it in a simple term. Personally, I think we just talked about 15 minutes too long on some silly
Well, it's like, because you brought in the politics, and for me, I can see where you could say that the Avengers were right-wing, especially because they were built up by Tony Stark.
Any warrior is right-wing. That's what that means.
But I don't know that I agree with that necessarily. I don't think you have to be a right-wing to be a warrior.
No.
Personally, I think Captain America is socially liberal. So that's definitely a bone of contention with me, to be honest, because it's like he was the guy who had a black partner and friend going back to the 60s when you hardly hired black people, period. And here's a guy who's working beside him as an equal.
Because the writer was living in that time just like I was living in that time. It was bothering him that why should we have a civil war in this country over color? It don't make no sense. And some of that bled into his right. And right wing doesn't necessarily mean prejudice. But when you use that term, it's a political term. It has no other meaning. And the political term right wing means you are pro-war. You are pro-super defensive, proactive in war.
Right, but I don't think that Cap is pro-war. I think that he is pro-peace, and he has to do what he has to do to get to that place.
Son, that's always the excuse of a killer. I'm just telling you, I had to do it. You know me. We were just talking about this last night. I've got no use for ultra-right-wing prejudice. I don't care what they call themselves. Fundamentalists, that's a funny one right there. You know, they called themselves Christian fundamentalists until people started calling Islam fundamentalists. And then they started creating other terms for themselves, like evangelistic. It's a conscious thing. You're trying to hide the truth about yourself so that you can show yourself to be self-righteous. And don't tell me TV superheroes aren't self-righteous. It's only been recently in TV shows and movies where the question comes up, how much is this worth? These superheroes, come on, let's face it, they're battling some supervillain and they take out half the city. You know, you got a city of a million people and they took out 150,000 just in one battle. How many World Trade Centers have they dropped in their battle? You know, it's the same thing with cop shows. It's a running joke. That's one of the things that things like Lethal Weapon, it's kind of a running joke. Well, yeah, you got these two guys that were robbing the bodega or whatever, but let me see. You did $30 million worth of damage in 15 minutes. That's self-righteous. I mean, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be the hero no matter what.
So, and I've heard this oft times with people that were especially left-leaning, just seeing all superheroes as being fascistic, all superheroes as being inherently to the right because of their answer, you know, they answer most problems with violence and their self-appointed guardians that cause all kinds of destruction.
Okay, there you go, overthinking what I said.
Mm-hmm.
You know how I feel about things. Yeah, they're self-righteous. They're very cavalier. I mean, they are super cavalier. If they gave just a little bit of thought, that's the other thing. I mean, you see that in the Fantastic Four, where Doc doesn't want to proceed till he's got everything right. And almost invariably, there's some reason why he can't go before he's ready. You know, it's like, well, it might be ready. Let's do it! Creating another $5 million worth of damage. The people who go into battle without forethought, I mean, I would have no problem defending myself, my home, you know, me and mine, and not feeling guilty about it. On the other hand, if I had collateral damage, it would really take a piece of it, okay? So I've got to be sure. That don't mean I hesitate before I pull the trigger. That just means I got to be sure before I do it. And as I just explained, there would be some margin for collateral damage, and I know it. And if I have a fear, it's not of the enemy, because I'm ready and willing. It's because of the collateral damage that could possibly happen. But none of that makes any difference. Everything we just talked about doesn't make a hill of difference, because you're talking about fantasy. So you can laugh about it and think about it just like I just did, the collateral damage of it all, and still enjoy the whole scene that they're creating, you know?
You can do a high-minded version of Mighty Mouse versus Superman. You know, it's still basically kind of the same thing because it's all still a fantasy, but you can inject some of that adult content into there to make it more interesting for adults in conversation.
Yeah, there used to be a poster that created a lot of... I had it, and if there was one thing that I owned that disappeared when I was in the service that I really wish hadn't disappeared, it'd be that poster. And it was a poster of all the Disney characters in all this depravity, you know?
The Wally Woods, the Disney Memorial Orgy. I've got a black and white version of it in one of my magazines, and yeah.
I had a blacklight poster that was like 3 foot by 2 foot, and it could be done. But yeah, you know, personally, I think Disney characters going up against superheroes, there might be a deficiency in how well you can adjust to that kind of fantasy. But it's obvious to me, it should be obvious to anybody, that they are all right wing. They're all self-righteous warriors. They view it as a calling. Now, deny they don't.
No, no. I mean, that's kind of the basis for the last Captain America movie, Civil War, is Iron Man realizes that there are such heavy consequences of what they're doing that he is in favor of registration and regulation and kind of wants to put a clamp down on it, and Cap's unwilling to do that because he's so convinced of his own, he has moral certitude. Depending on your views of the characters and your views of the situations, people view Cap as the villain, people view Iron Man as the villain, but there is a tendency to see them in those terms.
But the Iron Man character is completely different than Captain America. The Iron Man character is a big captain. He's already, him and his father before him are defined as capitalist, corporate beasts. Yeah, they are hypocritical. They're supposed to be defending the nation, and at the same time, they're destroying it with their own corporation. In truth, if you look at Lex Luthor, if you look at him, you can see the mindset of the writers, they were writing him as a robber baron of a different era. Because, as old as I am, the truth is, like Stan the Man, he's of a completely different era than I am. He might have been a young man when I was a young boy. But at the same time, we talked about this the other night, I remember my great aunts and uncles who I spent a lot of time around, they were born in the 1870s. One of them was born in 1869. Okay? To somebody like you, that must feel like ancient. And yet, I was around them, you know? And they wore clothes from that time as leisure wear and stuff. And Stan is that much older than I am. So, he probably knew a lot of them. You know, he may have had known people who had been in the Civil War real close. I knew people that were in World War I real close. And the Spanish-American War. But not the Civil War. I mean, they were still living in the 60s, early 60s. There were still a few of them around. You'd see them at parades and stuff. But I didn't know them. I wasn't close to them. In any case, any warrior is right wing. If you're pro-war, you're automatically right wing. But finding fault in them, say somebody who's a liberal pacifist, which I think is what you're talking about. I mean, liberal pacifist and a social liberal, they can come together because they both have a liberal notion of social contact. But their viewpoints are going to be very, very different. Personally, I don't believe in most of our war bullshit is about defending corporate assets. They're supposed to be separate from the state issue. But somehow, somewhere along the line, they have convinced our populace that it is somehow these corporate interests are tied into our national interest, into our national defense. But I don't see it that way. I see it for what it is. And to tell you the truth, if they're actually, you know, I don't believe in all that sci-fi silliness. First off, I was raised in a time where we didn't understand radioactivity. And a lot of this crap, I mean, think about it. Some of these superheroes, like Spider-Man, that's basically what it boils down to. It's because we didn't understand it. And so they started writing it because while it does mutilate cells and cause cancer and stuff, you know, it doesn't turn you into a web shooting spider, you know, it doesn't turn you into a human fly. But when I was coming up, we didn't know that. It was a fantasy you can grasp because we just didn't know. You know, we're pretty damn dumb ignorant. And maybe that's why I'm such an ardent jerk when it comes to ignorance. You know, I get carried away and pissed off at ignorance. And I think that's why. Because I came up in age, we were all ignorant. And I finally got some education at a time when a lot of that ignorance was being dispelled. So, but that self-righteous prejudice about ignorance kind of stuck.
Well, that and you recognize that it's more difficult to be ignorant. You have to kind of almost make a choice of being ignorant these days because there's so many resources available to you.
That's right.
Where in your own times, you know, there was plenty of opportunity to be ignorant if you didn't find the opportunity to find education, you know. It wasn't as easily accessible as it is today.
Well, and, you know, I grew up, our family was just, we weren't poor, you know, and we had... Before computers and stuff, they had things called encyclopedias. We had encyclopedias. We didn't have the Funkin' Wagnall. We had the World Book Encyclopedia. You know, and we felt like we were a cut above. And there was a lot of useful information in there, but there's a whole lot of ignorance. I know because I probably read them things cover to cover 15, 20 times in the year. I mean, there was sometimes I wouldn't have anything to do, and there was the World Book. And just like you Google something today, I would go to the World Book, see if I could answer a question I couldn't figure out. Sometimes you couldn't, but at the same time, sometimes you saw a picture or something with a brief explanation and you could come away from it as if you did answer it. But there was also people that, I mean, you know, when I was a kid, we knew people, we had babysitters when we lived in Tennessee. They had outhouses. They didn't have running water in the house. They had electricity. They may even have a TV. In this case, these people didn't have TV. They did have a hi-fi. Played Elvis records all the time because that's what kind of records they had. but you still had to go down to the bottom of the hill and climb inside this nasty run-down shack thing. You think a porta potty's bad. Woo-wee. And they didn't always have toilet paper. Sometimes you'd have to wad up a sack from the grocery store. They were ignorant because they had a legitimate reason to be ignorant. But nowadays, you have people walking around. It kind of reminds me of what we used to call the welfare Cadillac. They may not have a car. They may be half a month behind in their rent in the apartment. But by George, they got themselves a smartphone. And they can use that phone to educate themselves. But they don't do it. Either because they're not interested or they just flat don't want to know. And then you got people that got lots of money. They got a good plant job. And, you know, out here, a high school diploma, if you go to work in the plant, you can make as much as a lot of halfway decent attorneys and professional people. You're talking $150,000, $175,000, maybe $250,000 a year. And you got a high school diploma. You just don't have an excuse to be ignorant. You got some of these people, if you walk down the street, you see they have cable and satellite TV. They got phone internet and DSL in the house. Some of them have satellite systems. It's all around them. But do they look? They don't want to look. They have an opinion. You know, it goes back, you know, I might not always be right, but by God, I ain't never wrong. So why should I look any further? I know my own mind. They made up their mind to be ignorant. So yeah, you're right. Called that one. And I don't have any patience with them. You know I don't have patience with them. Because out here, 99% of them are just like that. And somebody asks me something publicly, I'll answer it publicly, and I don't care how many dirty, lockjaw stares I get. And I guess maybe there's a certain self-righteousness to that, too. But we were talking about superheroes.
You hadn't talked too much about the DC ones, though. You watch those movies?
Yeah, I watched the movies.
Which ones do you like? You know, which ones do you not like?
When I was a kid, I didn't care who wrote the comic book. I covered this once before.
I meant which movies did you like, which movies you didn't like. That's all.
Well, I'm not sure if I can say I didn't like the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think as fantasy movies go, most fantasy movies I like. Even some of the bad ones. You know, in my collection, I mean... I've got Arnold Schwarzenegger as I've got that stupid movie he did where he was Hercules, right? That's a bad movie, man. I don't care who you are, but it's also a funny movie. It's an enjoyable movie. It's crap. So asking somebody, you know, I like bad movies. I've got a huge collection of black genre movies, what they call exploitative film, you know. I love that stuff. Some of them, I guess, are pretty decent. But a lot of them are just crap. Their acting's even crap. But that's just what makes them so good, you know? So when you talk to somebody like me about which ones you liked and which ones you didn't, I think I liked them all. Or at least found some redeeming something in them. The only thing I can talk about is the production of the film, their presentation of the film. I'll give you an example. I don't even know if we ever talked about it, but the Superman Batman film, that caught a lot of flack. I enjoyed it. Not only did I enjoy it, I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Did you see the theatrical or the extended version?
No, I've got the extended version.
Yeah, see, I never saw the theatrical version, and my friends who did just freaking hated it. But I thought that when they elaborated on more of the stuff, that told the story better, more thoroughly. I didn't love it, but I didn't hate it like a lot of these people did.
I didn't even concentrate on it. But I think that people, and I hear y'all talking, you talk to me about it, just can't be serious about that stuff. You know, it's entertainment. I'm not going to dissect it. I'll tell you one thing. Find somebody that's got an issue with the cinema photography and the CGI in it. It was great. I didn't see it in 3D. But I can pretty much, by watching the DVD, tell you what's good and not. Now, all you got to do is look at how sharp the picture is and how sharp it is when something's moving. They did a dead bang job on that film. And it was really nothing that I expected. Just like the Wonder Woman was nothing what I expected. So yeah,
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
You said it was like nothing you were expecting, so...
I was come on, man. Superman versus Batman, he would crush him in seconds. There wouldn't be any struggle. it's almost genius if you stretch it out 2 hours and 10 minutes. I mean, Superman versus... Come on, Superman versus anybody! You better have some kryptonite in your shorts, because Superman's going to get you. I don't care who you are. And, you know, that's part of the thing is Superman. Well, how are they going to make it tough for him this time? You know, the original Superman character on TV.
How about George Reeves?
Yeah. He was almost a regular guy. He always won. There was never a struggle. He may have a little trouble finding you and catching up to you, but once he did, you were dead meat. He didn't have to kill you. He was above that. He was so powerful, he didn't have to kill anybody. He didn't even have to beat you up. Which is absolutely the truth of the matter. You gotta really work hard to make Superman break a sweat about anything. So for me, I mean, they would have done a good job, because they did it in such a way, you almost believe, like, you know, maybe Superman wasn't all powerful. But that is the whole thing with Superman, man. And I don't care if it's Supergirl. Screw Superman, you got Supergirl. I don't care who you are.
Yeah, you watch that show too, don't you?
What?
Supergirl?
Sometimes. See, what happens is they'll have 3 or 4 good shows, and then they get all soap opera and stupid. Usually it's some mental condition, some guilt, or somebody got killed, some mournful thing that poor Supergirl just can't fight herself, you know? She just starts falling apart. But of course, you know, in the show, she's got all these people that have almost the same powers as she does. But in any case, when they get all soap opery and silly about it, I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in drama. So I'll quit watching it. And then maybe the next season they'll have a few. But yeah, I probably miss at least 50% of the shows, and I do it on purpose. You know, I take a break. Maybe when I come back to it, when I feel like checking to see if there's anything good about it. But, you know, I was a big fan of Supernatural, and I probably watched it first year and a half, and then it went to crap. And then I can't remember when it was, but I know it's still on TV, but I thought they were going to get canceled. And they started doing these really silly, stupid shows. I mean, just kind of turned it into a really ridiculous comedy, and I watched it. But then they went back to being dopey soap opera, and I quit watching it again. Like I said, I started off as being a big fan of that show, and I'll bet you that I probably only watched 20% of the show. I don't even bother even checking to see what the stupid show's supposed to be about, just in case I want to record, because I completely lost interest in it. What's that? Oh, The Exorcist. I thought that might be interesting. Not. I tried watching 2 or 3 of the shows, and it was just crap. Just like The Inhuman. I watched the first show, and I thought, well, it's all right. I got halfway through the second show. I said, crap. I'm not watching this stupid thing. And Gifted is on, like I said, is on the cliff there. I'm probably going to stop watching Gifted. You know, the mama in that show, she was, there was another show. Can't think of the name of the show, but it was kind of like started off as kind of a secret agent executioner kind of show, where the computer is using all the cameras around the world.
Oh, Person of Interest.
Yeah, Person of Interest. I really liked that Person of Interest show, and probably watched it 2 years. There was times, though, when I would just fast forward through the show. But she played, at one time, she was his opposite, because she got in tune with the computer, and she was already a murderous, untrustworthy wackadoodle-doo. But then the computer become like her god, and so she worked with him on and off. So I'm real familiar with her, and if sometimes that monotone, crazy-eyed, whatever it is in her acting comes out that I see kind of out of places for a mama worried about her kid. But it's a soap opera. It just hasn't gotten so bad that I've decided to quit watching it yet. But it's getting there.
Well... Let me go ahead and let you go watch the season finale of Game of Thrones and then pass out. I'll talk to you later.
All right, son. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.